Maybe some of that. Okay, so after the morning talk, during the talk I changed a little and added some of the slides. I don't see Leo if he's here, but anyway. So I will not go through all these things that I wanted to go through, because after all, Turing can be considered the founder of the field that we are talking in this meeting. And the thing is that following his footsteps, this is the machine that he developed when he was 28, to understand the brain, and this is happened now with the net is fantastic. This is Einstein's brain, real Einstein brain. And the point is that self-organization, how it is related to understanding things which are related to the brain. And I don't have much time to talk about, so basically what we want to understand, we would like to understand, or the dream is to start from the gene network, go through the neuron, go through this mess of the neuron and glia, go to this level that we had this morning, that they can poke different level and see the correlation, and then see how what we can talk about intelligent machine evolves, and this is, as I said, really his brain. What did I do? No, oh, that should be the left. Okay, so I wanted to tell you that we can, because we had a lot of discussion to what extent we can understand from simple system, and simple system, I mean one of the demonstration that I did yesterday, let's just let it go to remind you and show to people that didn't see. This is water and glycerin when you look from through the binocular and you see all these patterns. So this is lovely and beautiful, and we see also very nice patterns that emerge. And the question, if this is art, like I posted there, the art of the bacteria, or can we turn it into science, or even can we learn from such very, very naive systems? All this is back 20 years. This is another thing that I don't know where I'm living now, in the beginning of the 80s or the new century. All this started then. And we can, because how we go from here to here, this is very complex. We force it, we see complexity, we can learn. We can learn from such engineering of air bubble to be snowflake that you can engineer externally the system. You can also then, if you engineer the system externally, you might be learn how the system engineers itself from internally, and if you impose different condition, you express different abilities of the system. So once we understood this notion of microscopic solvability, I don't mention name of Gödel because most of the people here are involved in it and they know who they are, so and I don't have time. So you can take electrochemical deposition and you see morphology transition, because we understand the microscopic solvability and that there is an interplay, which is a singular interplay between different levels, which makes the problems complex, but also helps us in order to develop new strategy to research. And I try to really tell you. So, and we see that when you go from one type of morphology to the other on the large scale, this is centimeter scale, you see changes down to the micron scale. This is electron microscope. Similar kind of things you see in bacteria. This is now different type of engineering. We put here biotic perturbation that cause the same bacteria to go from one type of growth to another type of growth, which is done by exciting or changing a gene expression in partially reversible way, and it goes from this type of bacteria, in this case, which are shorter. This is on the borderline of the transition. You see the appearance of some long bacteria, which correspond to this one. And this has to do with the talk that we had before, how bacteria divide and how sometimes they stop dividing. They stop dividing, they can regulate this thing. And the difference between these two patterns is that they just have to activate a gene that helps them to stop dividing. So we start to get more and more intuition, but we have to remember one thing. We can force the bacteria to grow like snowflakes or like the air bubbles that I showed you before. However, we have to remember that these are not air bubbles, these are bacteria. And one of the problems that we might fall into is, I try to prepare a cartoon, is that we might fall into a trap that we try to treat this system as if they were a physical system, but they are not. So we must avoid physification of biology. The question is how? Why? Because we see similarity in the patterns, And it's very nice and beautiful, and it helps us on the sensing. But remember that they are different. The question is, once we show the similarity, now we have to go the opposite way and try to find or develop ways to understand if we're talking about a non-living system or about a living one. One thing is to find the right quantified observables to characterize the pattern. There are many ways, and all the time there were questions if this is the best way. Nothing that I'm presenting now in this talk is best or optimal or anything. I just want to say that it's useful and can teach us new things. So I don't want to talk about the best thing, and we forgot all the details in the world. However, you do one kind of characterization of a pattern. For example, you do a spiral around, you measure the gray level, you discretize it, you see pattern of events, you see sequence, and then what we know as physicists, we do statistical scaling properties. And it's very nice, because this statistical scaling properties is a Levy-like distribution. And there are about 20 papers in Fields of Letter, and then 10 papers in Nature, different systems, that they show that they fulfill Levy-like distribution. The question, if we should be happy and satisfied, well, it depends what we are looking after. If we're looking after to show that there is a Levy distribution, of course we are very happy. And I have my own experience of publishing Fields of Letter showing that it's a Levy distribution. But then people ask you, so what? And does it tell you that this system is different from the non-living system? Or does it tell you that, again, you try to show that everything in the world is just the crystals? Well, one of the things that we learn, and I think this is an important message that we learn from this system in comparison to this one, is how or if we can identify things that will tell us, look, they cannot tell us for sure, because there is no definition for life or living system. But can we find some quantified observable that will tell us, look, we would associate this behavior with a living one and not a non-living one. Or it indicates something new in the game. And what I try to suggest to you, this is the message we carry to the work on the neural network. Because we're going to take neuron, a mixture, unspecified mixture from, instead of cutting the scalp and taking electrodes within a person, we take mixture of neurons, unspecified, put it down on a plate. And the question, if the activity that you observe is related to a collection of transistors that you'd buy in radio shape and let someone arbitrarily connect them, or it has to do with some properties that related to the brain of normal people or brain that have something that caused them almost a damage that they will be like radio shake. And I show you, and the message is, that what we have to look is not the statistical scaling properties or the average one, but actually on the variations. And not only the variations, because the name of the game in biological system, after looking at them for a long, long time, what really caused us problem at the beginning as a physicist is the fact that there are large variations, and we don't like it, because we can take the, as David mentioned, it is problem to take the continuum limit, because they don't want to behave like the continuum limit. Because if you take the problem of DLA, and David, this is the last thing that we talked, and they would behave like what Laplace field tells them to behave, they will be very sensitive to anything. But if they behave like a DLA in the sense that they have discrete things and they have their own large variations, the large variations that they produce themselves helps them to be more flexible when they are exposed to external variations, provided that they regulate the variations. So what we're going to look for are large variations that have correlations which are self-regulated. This is the take-home lesson from this field, and just to show you that these things are variation. This is on the microscopic, each bar is a bacterium, and this is another thing which is very interesting, going from level to level. And this level, it seems that they have some organization into a new entities, these vortices. These are the vortices that you see in the picture. You go to the higher level, looking at the vortices, and the initial behavior of the colony, what you see that they behave quite chaotic. This is a time-lapse picture. You see, as if each has its own identity, moving arbitrarily, not knowing what the other do. But they have communication using chemical field and so on that I don't have time to talk about. And eventually, after this is this initial stage, they organize, and they have large variation, but you can see in the eye that there is also underlying some kind of structure. It's not arbitrary. A structure is emerging out of it. Okay, that's just, I skip this. So, how can we take this message and bring it to the research of neural network? It took us 10 years. And again, as a physicist, we look at the brain and it's so complex. What do you do? So you first do the simplest thing. Are there some characteristic time scales and length scales that we can identify and they can give us a hint? And there are. There are 1 millisecond, which is related with the basic action potential of individual neuron. It's also related, when I say 1 millisecond, it can be 1.1, 0.9, or 2, or 3. Okay? I just emphasize, I'm not talking about details. But there is 1 millisecond length scale. There is also 100 millisecond length scale when you have many neurons acting together that I show you. There is also a velocity, 1 meter per second of propagation of the pulses, which immediately tells you that there is a characteristic length scale of 1 millimeter. So what you do? You take neurons and you'd like to grow a network on an area of about 1 millimeter, on an area which is much smaller, and on a much larger one. Why? Because if this is a characteristic length scale, maybe we'll see some spontaneous self-organization into subnetworks here, and some amplification of the connection, synaptic connection, because there are not enough connection. The other thing that we want to see, what kind of the complex behavior is associated with the fact that we have only very few neurons, normal size, because if you projected what happened in the cortex down to 2 millimeter in terms of neuron, it's about 20,000, and much larger number, 1 million. So that's a strategy. However, when he tried to do it, nothing was available to do these experiments. So we had to develop our own methods. We had to develop a lithography method that we can prepare something like this, only 50 neurons. Now, in order to do it, 50 neurons will not be active. So you have to separate them also from some heat bath of neuron and glia cell, if you want, that provide them with nutrient and take off the waste products so they can be active. And we can do 2 millimeter by 2 millimeter, and we can also do some additional things if you want, feed forward and so on and so forth. Okay, once you are about this, you have to do, once you know this, you want to do it on top of electrodes. You have an array of electrodes which is open over here. Now, the coupling with the electrode, this is a question that has been mentioned here. You want it to be non-invasive. So you know that it doesn't interfere with the normal, whatever mean the normal behavior of the neurons. So this has been available because there are special electrodes and they have a very nice structure which connected to our field in a, again, of making very large capacitance by growing something that has such structure, because the coupling between the activity of the neurons, which are here coupled to the electrode, that's about 30 micron, is a capacitive coupling. So you need the capacitance to be quite large. Okay, and then in order to do recording, if you look for correlation, one additional thing that you want is to let the patient walk with the wires going out for a week or 2 weeks. Okay, so we want the neurons to be hooked up with the neuron, just that the scales are different. And they don't have their own life-supporting system. So we build a life-supporting system for them so that we can record from 1 millisecond up to 8 weeks. Okay. Then, if you want so much data, you have to develop another way. Another thing, you have to have some method that automatically tell you when you have an action potential. Because you also record for many neurons in the same thing, so you use again what you know from physics and publish it in fields of letter, so you have a special thing using wavelets and so on. Okay, once you have all this, what you do, you start the experiment. So you record, see here there are neurons, and you record, and you see a time sequence. Each bar here, it's been one action potential of individual neuron, and you continue and record alone. And now you look at this. This is a raster plot. This is time, and this is the activity. Each row here is a different neuron. And you see that there are events of the network that they fire, dense firing. The point is that these events are called synchronized bursting events, as was mentioned in the first talk, because of historical reason. It is not synchronization in the usual sense of the word that we use. It just means that they fire within a segment of time together. And these segments are well separated from each other. So each one here is a synchronized burst, and the first stage that I want to tell you is that we'd like to look at each of them without its identity, ignoring the internal structure of a burst, looking at the level of the network, and look at the properties of this sequence of events of the network, which is comparable or corresponds to what we heard at the beginning, at the first talk. Because now you can view it as if we measure from a network and just looking at the events, the total events. But we keep the information about the internal structure. Okay, Jim, this is for you, the present. Okay, so what we are after, we try to track a Wurzel. Why a Wurzel? Because we hope there is something there. And we hope to see something in these traces. And we hope that if we use too sophisticated method to analyze it, we will not find our own traces, as happened to them. Okay, the point is that if you take a random signal and you try to analyze with something which is very sophisticated and it's pre-assumed, you can recover it back. So that's a very complicated game. Okay, so some concise history that neuron, well, I don't have time to do this. Okay, so first of all, we do what we are used to do. Namely, look at the sequence, look at the interval between firing, look at the distribution, it satisfies or can be approximated by non-symmetric Levy distribution. And important thing, there is some most probable interval. Then you look at the differences in the interval, and you see that it agrees with a symmetric zero mean Levy distribution. Yes?
What kind of neurons
we found
that?
What kind of? Neurons from rats. Charles River rats.
Yeah. Well, okay. Which part of the brain?
Cortex. I said at the beginning, I take unspecified collection of neurons from the cortex. Why the cortex? Because we want to understand intelligence. So we want to see if they will tend to be intelligent. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Because
why rats?
Because yeah, we take the neurons. Take the neurons. The process is not very nice. It's done in medical school. We get only the mixture after they run it through a blender to remove all the connections that were there. So we get the neuron, we go through method of how many and what concentration and to put on top of the plate, special lithography that they will land down where we want them to land. Within about a week, they send dendrites, form connection, start to be active.
They connect,
they form everything, and they are with glial cell. We come back to it later. Okay? So that's the type of thing that we have. And now we see some surprises. Why surprises? Because we look at different networks. And remember, these are 20,000 and million network neuron. They're also more or less the same Levy. Of course, each network will have its own parameters and so on of the Levy. Yeah.
Even with a million, you're recording from single neuron.
What we do, the neurons.
A million, but
yeah, no. The neuron, okay, it's a good question. I didn't specify it. I think I showed the area. They are spread over 2 centimeters square area, but the electrodes are still within 2 millimeter by 2 millimeter. So we do what was done in the brain. We record, for the case of the million, we record only from a specific area.
But you're still connecting to single neurons.
Single neurons and only, for example, 30 neurons out of this area, but to individual neurons. We connect to individual neurons, and that's very important. Okay, so they show a Levy-like, but surprisingly, all these different scale networks show similar average or mean, it's not average because it's scale-free, the Levy, show similar most probable interval. And that shows you that there is something going on which is non-trivial. What is going on? So first of all, you can do model, and I decided this time not to talk about models. So, but you can do model, and it's a long story, I don't have time, I can talk in the discussion, and you make model, and the model recovers such thing on a, over 3 decades of time, which is very nice and very lovely, and we never publish it for the following reason. Because we decided to see what the model, if the model can help us to make new predictions. So what we came up is a new method that we have a model network that we do feeding into the network using data recorded from the system. Since we have also a system of only 50 neurons, we can take special neurons, I don't have time to specify. We see in the plate, they form special neurons that fire more rapidly than the other, and we think that they are regular neurons. If we feed them in, we see things which are agree better with the observed system. The other thing, once we take this, now we test the effect of synaptic stresses. So what the idea? The idea is the following. We imitate now the real network, in the sense if there is some self-regulation, we feed in the regular network, the neuron, the real data, change the synaptic connection between the neuron. What we see is the following, that as you change the average level of the synaptic connection, you don't change the average distance between the intervals of the firing of the network as a whole. What you change is the internal structure of the synchronous bursting, which tells us that this is a way for having large network to work, provided if you make the stresses too strong, it will not be Levy anymore. It will turn into a Gaussian. If you make it too weak, you have to do if you have a large network, because you have million neurons, so you have to reduce the level of the synaptic connection, they lose the ability to show synchronized behavior. So the idea is that really it hints from the model that the system, in order to show it, has to self-organize itself into sub-networks. And the idea is...
I didn't understand how you're changing the synaptic strengths.
No, in the model. So what we do, since we don't know how to change them in the experiment, we take model that shows agreement with the experiment, feed it with data from the experiment, and now change the synaptic strengths in the model, and try to see what would happen, assuming that this is, of course, it's not a good description and so on, but it gives us a hint. Okay, now, about the variation. Now you want to see, you have model and everything, it's nice, and now you shoot yourself, as Herbie told me, in the foot. Why? Now you become the critic of your own experiment. Instead of looking at the Levy, so you take systems, a recorded one, and a model network, not fitted with data from outside, just a model network. They show the same Levy type, but now what you look is the following thing. You look, Levy doesn't have a standard deviation because the moments are unbounded. Okay, so instead, you're looking how you deviate from something. So you look at the differences in the interval square and see how it depends with the length of the system. And what you see is the following, that in the real network, goes like this, at steps. While in the a model network, this is the type of pattern. And very interestingly, if you take the data from here and shuffle it, just reorder randomly the intervals, you get this thing, which looks very much like the model, which gives you a hint that maybe here there is some regulation of the appearance of the interval. Okay, I have a lot of things to do. There is a hierarchical structure. It implies that previous ways how the thing, okay. After the first talk, I added this thing that I took it out because I thought I'd not have time. Really now, if you want to compare the variations or the correlation between neurons, what you have to do is to, and it was mentioned, to look at the frequency time domain, but in a different way. Instead of looking at each location in time, at different bands of frequency, you realize that at each location in time, you have different results if you do averaging over different time windows. Because you have a behavior which is a Levy-like. It has a scale-free kind of tail. So how do you treat such system? Well, what you have to do is to use wavelet packet decomposition and then use some method to obtain from all the possible tiling. Tiling means that at each location you look what is the nice triangle that represents resolution in time and resolution in frequency, the relevant one, by minimizing some cost function that I don't have time to go into. But doing so, you see that you capture things. Why? You look at this pattern of this sequence, and you look at this pattern, the time, and you see that they look different. It shows you also indication that this is a better way to look. That's a side remark for the lecture before. So now we're looking for correlations. Coherence, it was mentioned. The name that was used in morning was coherence. We look for hidden one. In addition to the one you see, we also look for a hidden one. To do so, we now have to go back and look at the internal structure of the Bersing of the network. And you see that they have some different internal structure. So what you do, you calculate the correlation, cause correlation between every N and M synchronized Bersing. Well, the idea to do it is very simple. You take one, two of them, and then you move them across till you see the peak of the correlation and define this as the cause correlation between the two. Okay, and now what you look at the matrix, right? This is synchronized bursting from one to the number of synchronized bursting event that we see. Cross correlation, you don't see anything. So this is disappointing. Well, sometimes the disappointment, and this is the second present for Jim, who remember most of it by heart. So that's really not what we looked for. So the question, what you do? What?
But if you looked at the raw data, it looked asynchronous.
What?
During the recording.
Yeah, but now it was synchronized in time. When we didn't look at the structure of the individual one. Okay, not synchronized, what it looked, that there was some order in the appearance of the burst. Now we look at the burst inside to see how it is reflected in correlation inside. Let's say that the bursts that will appear together in this burst of bursts will be more likely or whatever, right?
Their internal structures will be similar, you're saying.
Well, we hope that the internal structure of the synchronized burst will reflect the organization on the temporal part. So we do it, and what we see, we didn't see anything. So there are two ways to do. Look for a different method or be stubborn. Sometimes one helps, sometimes the other, sometimes neither. Okay, so the idea has been maybe we should look at something which is more abstract. What does it mean more abstract? Maybe the correlation between each two neurons reflects something, but there is something deeper. What does it mean? You have a group of kids, and you ask how each given kid is similar or coordinate his activity with the other kids, with each of the other kids, and then you take another kid and ask how he coordinates his activity with all the other kids. And now you can say these two, how they coordinate their mutual activity, or how each one, what is the distance in the correlation of one with the rest and the other one with the rest. So this is a distance in the space of correlations. So you just define the distance as here, and this is clear what it means. It's n-dimensional space, but we all used to work in n-dimensional space when n is 1,000, so no problem. So then you do this, and you take the original matrix, and now you dendrogram it. What does it mean? You put together those that are closer in distance in the correlation space. And now you are satisfied. This is the large network, and you see that there is a partitioning into sub-networks. And now what you can do, you can look at the network of connectivity of these things. This is. But before you do it, you want to see if this is by accident or there is a meaning. So what you do, you look at a very small network and you see, no, there are no correlations also after you reorder it. And it's what you'd expect because there is no partitioning to sub. You look at the medium one and you see that there are stronger correlations than the small one, some are more correlated, but still no partitioning. You look at the large one and you see partitioning, which means there are 1 millimeter. Sometimes you don't see partitioning. Why? It's back to your question, Pierre. We have 2 centimeter by 2 centimeter. We zoom on 2 millimeter by 2 millimeters. Sometimes we can happen to see it on almost entirely on one subnetwork. Sometimes we are lucky and we sit on two or three. Okay? Now we plan to 5 minutes. Okay? This is including the generous of land of extra 5 minutes. Yeah? Oh, my goodness. Anyway, so sometimes you see different structure of correlation, of patterning. This is in case of that we add the calcium. You see the activity is very different, but each of these boxes is still maintained the division into two subnetworks. Don't have time to talk about it. Now, one thing which is very interesting, if you look at these subgroups of network, they correspond to three kinds of synchronized bursting events, if you look at the internal structure, but they have a mixed temporal appearance. That's very important, because their temporal appearance is not that they appear together and then the other one appear and then the third one, but they have mixed temporal appearance. Then you look at the thing that we saw this morning, the comparable one, that you draw a circle of this space of distances of correlation, and you draw the links, and you see that there is a clear division into three subgroups. Okay, now you can go back to the model and see to what extent the model can help you. So if you take a model and put arbitrary, uniform type of distribution of synaptic connection, it gives you this one. These neurons don't show correlation because these are the inhibitory neurons that included in the model. If you take a model and include by hand, insert by hand, a division into two groups that more correlated and less, then you see this kind of patterning, as you expect, which is nice because it shows you that it might reflect the existence of subgroups. Of course, it should be remembered that we don't say that the model shows us how this is done. We show that it tells us only what does it mean, maybe. Not how it is done, because the network does it by itself. We didn't impose it on the network. On the model, we did. Next thing is, since we have this division between the different synchronized bursting events, since we have recording from the individual neuron, we try to see if it would be reflected in a network of connectivity between the neurons. So we do this thing, and indeed it does. Well, you look at the correlations only, I added it after the first talk. These are the networks of connectivity of correlations. And you see also the reflections in real space, which is quite exciting if you think about it. This is network of neuron on a plate, and what we saw this morning is in the brain. And it's the same structure, but then we were not satisfied because we couldn't tell that one is different from the other. So we went back to the space of correlations, correlation distances. And we did it. And then all of a sudden, you see that in this space of distances, there is much clearer division into subgroup
this
of connectivity.
No.
These are three groups of neurons now are all for the case of the large network, looking inside into this space. And that's why we think that what really happened, it's a little bit abstract, but there is a hyperspace of correlation, because there are correlations between the bursting of the network, and each one has its own reflection in the network of connectivity between neurons in the space of correlations. So it's abstract, but what can we do? Life can be interesting sometimes. Okay, so this is the thing. Now you want to test it in 2 minutes. I show you the thing that we are most proud of, and this is what we try to do. So you want to test it, and what you do coupled network. But you want, going back to the first talk, we want to do two kind of coupled network. Now we can do it, because we do it ourselves. We can do mediated network, that they are bridged by a network of neurons, which we expect what happens really in the large network. But we can do also this thing, that you have two networks that are connected by links of axons, which might be what happened in the brain if you look at the remote parts. Well, we have to develop a special lithography method, and believe me, it was not easy. So these are the two network, and this is a connection. I show you here the kind of connection when you connect it by a bridge network. And we can control what are the distances and so on. It's a long story. Okay, don't have time to go. So you have the two networks. First of all, you want to see if they are synchronized. So you measure the raster plot from one, and you measure the raster plot from the other, and you compare it, and you see that they are synchronized. You see bursting events. And now you can look into this mediated network and look at the synchronized bursting events, and you see that they are divided into subgroups. And it corresponds also to subgroups of neurons. And you see that if you look at the space of correlation, that there are subgroups. But now, I just go forward, you can map it back into the physical space, and you see that indeed you have two groups on the two sides of these networks that are connected. Then what you can do, I also scan through it, you can now chop it. And believe me, this is not easy either. And you can ask Leo, probably doing surgery like this without the patient, have contamination and so on, because the immune system does get into the thing and we don't have the immune system in the plate and so on and so forth. You can cut it. And you see some things which are very interesting when you cut it. What does it mean? For example, here, this neuron has a very special role. After you cut it, you see that it maintains its role to produce this network, the activity, and so forth and so on. You can only also see that if you look at the mediated network that I show you versus the link one, what you see that the network no more are concentrated here and here. Why? Because they are connected to axons. So neurons here can have our correlations with neuron here. And this is again to the talk in the morning. And you see at the reflection. And you see, you know, that's especially what excited me, that you can have a neuron on one side now, when you have links through axons and no bridge through network. So you can have a neuron here. This kind of neuron, similar to the one that you show, that actually controls both sides, or the entire activity on both sides. Okay, testing's generality of the motif, I just scan through it very really. If you want to test it, you can now go about and look at living systems. You can look at living systems which are mammals or patients or so, you can go to insects. Why insects? Because you can record one specific ganglion, and it's the frontal ganglion of this, and what you can do, you can record from the ganglion in the animal when the animal is doing eating, for example, and this is for digestion. This is the ganglion. You can take the ganglion, it record from the system when you mention that it does like this or like this, so you can record from the system when it don't digesting, but when after meal the insect is reading or something like this and see if the activity is different. You can take neuron from this take the ganglion, put it on a plate and record from it, and then take neuron from it, put on a plate and let them evolve into a network. So you have all the sequence. What happened now? Okay. And, shit. Here what you see are insects feeding. And now you can look for function follow form in the action between these things. So privately I'll be happy to show everybody the movie. And then you see that there are bursts and bursts of bursts. And you can also see that you have division into subgroups. And even there is a division to subgroups in the bursts of bursting events. And you can show that if you compare this thing, I'll end here maybe. Move the way. Where is it? Okay. You compare different neurons on the plate. You see this is the behavior, and they have alpha, which is smaller, which means that they have more scale-free, more complex behavior. This is the case that we had from the neuron from rats. Then you can look at ex vivo, meaning that the ganglion is on the plate. You can look in vivo, thinking or reading, when the ganglion is in the animal, but the animal is not feeding. And you can record from the ganglion in the animal, in situ, when it is feeding. And you see that this is very different. It performs a specific task, so it's closer to Gaussian. And there is very large regulation. This is the this part of the distribution shows you the amount of regulation, so to speak, and this shows you how flexible it is. However, when it's not doing its task, the ganglion inside the animal and the ganglion on the plate show you very similar behavior. And I'm finishing in a second. Okay. Now there is something just a tease of or public relation for the next. We develop a measure of complexity, and you can show that in vivo, when it does its job to feeding, the complexity is very low. When you take it in vivo sinking or from the ganglion on the plate, the complexity is higher. This is, by the way, the complexity, and this is what the complexity that you look for after you do shuffling, which shows you an aspect of regulation. This is when you look at the culture. And let's stop here. Okay. Just for the discussion, this is for the discussion that people want. This happened to be a correlation between gene expression and correlation on the plate, but that's a different lecture.
There must be one question. Well, I understand the difficulties involved in the experiments, but what would be the take-home message regarding the what's happening in the cortical cell in vitro? So, I know there has been some previous experimental work done by many others in neuroscience using very similar setup, studying the activity of, say, in a culture neural network like what you have here, cortical cell, right? And people have been talking about some sort of wave propagation, activity propagation, and bursting events. And other than that, there hasn't been much, you know, analysis or deep insights.
Were you one of the referees that we had?
I'm sorry. In relation to, so you were talking about a variety of different analysis, and with all these analysis, what do you learn about, you know, neural network and the computational aspects of it, for instance?
What we learn from neural network is first, it's not many very analysis. What we want to see, we have a network on a plate that we can look at the individual neuron, and we see the activity. First of all, we saw that the activity, even on a plate, is not arbitrary, meaning that there are some motifs of self-organizing of the network, which extend both on a plate can be expressed and in the cortex of the animal. In order to show it, to demonstrate it further, we took the insects, that we could take the same neurons on the plate and in the animal. That's one thing. The other thing which is more important, you look at the brain and the brain is very complex. So you can look at it and say, wow, such a high complexity means that we are very clever, this is a reflection of our intelligence and so on. What does it help you? Well, the message is that the way that the information is stored, encoded, and encoded is neither in the sequence, in the temporal location, or the time coding that people assume. It can't be also encoded or stored in the rate coding. What the brain does, it's far more sophisticated. It is stored in connectivity network in the space of correlation. Why this is so smart? Because it tells you that if you have n neuron, the amount of information that you can store is not a fraction of n squared, but it is a fraction of n factorial. It shows you also that there is something more going on, because the focus has been on the neurons. And the question that I hope to hear was, how come you take neurons, put them on a plate, and they spontaneously become to be active? What activates them? Why a collection of neurons on a plate will turn and be active? Well, if you take the entire brain and put it on a plate, believe me, I didn't do the experiment, but maybe some place in a hospital it has been done, and unlike what you saw in Frankenstein movies, a brain on a plate will not be active. So the question is why it becomes active. And the other thing which is surprising, you have this network that we saw also in the case of the cortex that maintain themselves after the attack of epilepsy. You still have the same subdivision into subnetworks. What maintains it in a plate? How can neuron, collection of network on a plate, show you different networks on connectivity in this abstract state? You add calcium stress and it maintains it, which tells you it cannot be stored as it was thought in the neurons. The neurons are an element or machine to express the stored information. There must be something in addition. For example, either some neurons or some group of neurons that collectively store this information, or more likely, that's what I believe, is with the glia. So I think it's a little bit further than just look and see something moving on the plate. It's a method which is far more deeper if it's correct, because it changed the perception how these things work. It might be wrong, but if it's not wrong, it completely changed the perception how it does work, and you would not be able to find such hidden motive if you look at the entire system with all its complexity.
I have a simple question. If I understood correctly, by your definition, the complexity was higher in vitro than
yes.
in vivo?
Yes. Yes.
Does that
when
surprise you?
Look, you? What?
It seems surprising.
First, it seems surprising. That's why I showed it. And then if you think about it, and that's why I showed at the beginning the simple, naive experiment, not experiment demonstration with Hillishaw. What happens in vitro, because it's unspecified network, that's what we assume. It's unspecified collection that organize. It's not organized under cues or a constraint from outside. Okay? So it shows you the entire spectrum of possibility that the system has. That's why it was so important for us to do the experiment with the insects. Because we took now not unspecified collection of cells from the cortex, but from a specific ganglion. And then you saw that if you take this specific ganglion, put it on a plate, it shows you a level of complexity which is similar to what it would show you in the animal when it doesn't do the function that it's supposed to do, that it's for digestion. But when it digests, so it has additional constraint coming from the stomach, trigger it to do a specific thing. Another thing that you can see that I didn't have time to mention, you see some bundles of axon coming from this ganglion. If you look at each axon and record the activity, you see that each corresponds to subnetwork within the ganglion. So it's very similar to the organization of the network into subnetwork. So this ability of the neuron to organize into subnetworks, and the subnetworks, the additional thing which is very important, they wouldn't be able to organize to subnetworks that can work together if it wouldn't be that there is, and there is no clock, there is no external clock, but they organize themselves such that the mean interval will be the same irrespective of the thing and irrespective of the strength of the synaptic connection. So you can have two networks with different strengths of a connection, synaptic connection, they will be similar rate so they can work together.
Did you do your glia neurons in there? Did you do at the same time like calcium imaging in the glia? And if you did, is there a relation between the sub?
No, we hope to do the thing. We didn't do it. That will be very interesting to do. What we try to do is, in addition to coupling, electric coupling between the network, to couple them through micro channels that we can separate them above and have micro channel that can just couple the calcium wave without coupling the electrical activity, so to separate these two things. So that's what we're working on. Hope other people will do the calcium wave.
Perhaps we can continue this discussion in the discussion period. I want to make sure that Leonard has time. Let's thank Eshe for
now. How do you do this?